Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 25th, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter, October 25th, 2020. We have entered a new stage of understanding the pandemic, that it is here for the long term and perhaps forever. There is an across-the-board fatigue from the coronavirus. People's tempers are ready to snap. Here is where people might grow cognizant of the egoism that is sending them to their death, and the need to overcome it, even at the price of replacing care for oneself with care for others, as long as one gains the strength and motivation to move, to socialize, to live, and after that, perhaps people will see a completely different future. From apathy, people will reach the realization that there is no point in thinking about yourself. It's rather by thinking of others that life will acquire new meaning. If everything is about others, then we get a new, spiritual world, one that is opposite to the previous one. The most significant change in humanity is its disillusionment in life, apathy, the unwillingness to strive for anything. This will eventually lead to a re-evaluation of life, the need to find an aim higher than life. Then the will to achieve it will come back. Life will acquire a higher meaning. The main test is, what does a person aspire to, and how strong is his desire? A change of intention is like switching the car gear from forward to reverse, which determines whether I am moving forward toward the creator and the creatures, or backward. Will there be another civil war? From my Facebook page, Michael Leitman, October 25, 2020. A student told me he had heard, or perhaps read, the views of serious people recently, who had expressed fear that on November 4, right after the presidential election, a second civil war will break out in America. He said that those pundits also warned that it could spread beyond the borders of America and into Europe and other parts of the world. In all honesty, I cannot say what will happen the day after the election. Legally, America has done a great deal to cope with racial segregation. Nevertheless, despite a century and a half of abolition of legal slavery and more than half a century after the abolition of the Jim Crow laws, interracial separation, suspicion, and hatred persist. People were not taught how to love one another, how to form solidarity, so the hatred and separation between them remain. In a county where education means acquisition of knowledge, where knowledge is power, people dedicate no time, effort, or money to learning how to care or sympathize. As a result, the whole country is falling apart, and no amount of knowledge will stop it, since people didn't learn the one thing that matters, how to love each other. There is no American nation. There are American people. But there is no one nation under God. In the absence of national unity, every side pulls its own way and the country disintegrates. So is civil war after the election possible? Since they haven't mended the problem that caused the first war, we can't rule out another war. As long as the segregation de facto remains, anything's possible. As before, so now, the only remedy can come through education. However, this education should focus on connecting people's hearts, not on stuffing them with information that does not change their attitudes to one another. If Americans somehow, miraculously, manage to calm things down after the election and launch such a reconciliation program, one that relies on bringing unity and pulling people's hearts closer, then they can overcome anything. But if Americans maintain partisanship and cancellation of each other, America will fall apart. Will a civil war in America migrate elsewhere? I doubt it. The racial problem in the US is endemic. There are minorities elsewhere, of course, but the situation that exists in the US, between black Americans and white Americans, is unique, so I don't believe that clashes on that background will cause a chain reaction elsewhere. Ripples, perhaps, but not a full-blown chain reaction. Subtle units of measuring thought. All viruses are the result of our bad thoughts. But there are no instruments capable of measuring this connection because it is higher than ordinary material perception. There are many laboratories and studies trying to grasp the connection between the spiritual and the material, but this is impossible. Our good or evil thoughts belong to the human level since they are based on our egoism, the evil principle. Tell me, what device can be used to measure a person's egoism, and where should it be connected? Of course, not to the material body because it is only a biological machine that carries out orders. To the heart? But the heart is just a pump that can be replaced with an artificial one. Maybe to the brain? Also, number, where can a person's thoughts be extracted from in order to pass them through the device and see which thoughts are good and which are not and need to be corrected? Is it possible? You can build a cardiogram, measure frequencies, electrical processes in the body, but it is impossible to assess their essence. After all, it does not belong to matter. Therefore, science is not able to approach this. As a student, we had classes at the Human Brain Institute in St. Petersburg. Then I heard from the head of the department, who was a famous scientist, that we do not know where the thoughts and desires of a person are. Scientists tried to trace this connection, but it leads out of the brain into a sphere that we are not able to perceive. There, outside of man, are all our thoughts and desires. The human brain is a modem that connects the spiritual space, where all our thoughts soar, with human sensations. In our world, it is customary to identify a person with his animal body. But by studying Kabbalah, we build a spiritual partsuf, ascend to faith above knowledge. It is no longer material. The science of Kabbalah connects a person with his true essence as if separating him from the material body and attaching him to the soul. Therefore, the physical world disappears from our sensations because it is imaginary. When we reach such a connection between us, that we begin to reveal spiritual phenomena, then we will open the book The Study of the Ten Sephirot and we will be able to feel everything that is written there and read it like a musician reads a musical score. From Cab TV's Writers Meeting October 15, 2020. The virus spreads through thoughts. If I allow an unkind thought about others to come out and be expressed and heard, I give it an opportunity to manifest itself. As long as it is inside me, I can still suppress it, forbid these thoughts to come out of me, that is, make a restriction on my inherent egoistic nature. A negative thought about our neighbor is like an action. But I can catch and stop a thought without letting it manifest and hurting others. A thought initiates an action even if it is not a material one. If I allow an unkind thought to flow and act freely without trying to control and suppress it, I am harming my neighbor and committing a bad action in the world. We live in a world of thoughts. A thought is an action. Therefore, by allowing unkind thoughts to come out of me and believing that this is not bad, I act maliciously and thereby determine what is happening in reality. Our entire world, every person will have to check himself and find out how he influences others. This will require deep inner work and a lot of effort from everyone. Man must change the direction of his thoughts about others from negative to positive. And then, in this positive attitude toward others, he will feel an additional force of nature that he did not feel before. By changing our thoughts from negative to positive, we will save ourselves from the coronavirus and redeem the entire world from the epidemic and other problems. After all, this is how we bring ourselves in line with nature so that all its degrees, inanimate, vegetative, animate, and human will be in harmony, in good thoughts, mutually complementing each other. All that prevents this is our evil nature, our egoism. Therefore, we need to turn this egoistic attitude toward others into a good one. To do this, we need to work in groups so that we attract the good force concealed in nature and make it reveal itself. We demand that this good force, good relations, and unity be manifested between us, in the group. If we allow our egoistic thoughts to rule over us, and we do not connect, then the coronavirus will spread more and more. We will not have any remedy for this disease because the coronavirus is a display of our bad relations with each other. We just call it a virus. There will be many more such viruses that appear as a result of our evil thoughts, and we will suffer a lot. 6 months ago, there was still hope that the epidemic would gradually subside. Now, however, we see that it will only get worse and worse until we say, enough. Our corruption manifests itself in the form of a virus because the human body is filled with viruses. Viruses are information blocks that are in constant communication with each other at all levels of the body. We call them viruses, but in fact, we cannot exist without them. Each virus is a very complex entity, and we do not even understand a millionth part of the way it works. We do not know how our body functions. When such ruptures are revealed in the form of viruses, they can only be corrected by a force that is higher than them. And above the virus is thought. Viruses are carriers that transmit thoughts, they transmit data and information to different parts of the body and to the brain. Since our thoughts and desires operate at very high egoistic levels, they manifest themselves in such dangerous viruses. If we want to calm them down and bring them into balance, there is the wisdom of Kabbalah for this. Balance is restored by restriction, screen, and reflected light. You need to balance all the forces that activate these viruses so that they fall under the restriction and screen. Then all the viruses that caused the disease today will turn into beneficial ones. From the Writers' Meeting, October 15, 2020. Transition from world to world. We are all in a state of exile, which is an exile from the perception and knowledge of the Creator, the upper, spiritual world. There are only two states, exile and redemption. Being in a state where the Creator is concealed, we find ourselves in reality as it appears to us, now, that is, temporary and changing under the influence of the laws of nature. But there is a spiritual reality that we can ascend to. There are other times and definitions active there, and we find ourselves above time, motion, and space. How can we pass from this world, from the material reality perceived by the physical senses, to the spiritual reality? To do this, you need to develop spiritual sense organs that perceive the spiritual world. Even while in the animal body, while still living in this world, we can experience spiritual reality along with material reality. In the end, the material reality will melt away and we will all enter the spiritual world. How can we achieve liberation from our egoism, which now holds us, in the feeling of this world only? According to the Creator's program, egoism gives us various problems and troubles in order to force us to rise and leave this world. After all, if we always felt good in it, we would remain in these small egoistic desires forever. The Creator wants us to develop, and therefore awakens suffering in us, with various problems, forcing us to think about changing our state. He also points us in the direction of change, awakening egoistic relationships between us, that lead us to understand the need to rise to a different perception of the world, to a reality above our reason. The transition from world to world depends on whether a person perceives reality personally, individually, feeling the world as we see it today. Through personal perception, it is impossible to feel the world differently. Or a person begins to connect with others and perceives reality from this connection. One begins to think not about himself, but about what is good for the group, for the ten, or even for the whole of humanity. He identifies himself with others, outside of himself, and perceives reality through them. This will already be a spiritual perception of reality because he rises above his egoism, the desire to receive, which is called a body, to another perception in the global desire between him and others, which is called a soul. That is how he gets a new perception of reality. Therefore, The transition from the physical perception of reality to the spiritual one is an ascent from feeling within a person personally to the global sensation of the group, from the sensation of I to we. The greater this we, the stronger the sense of spiritual reality, eternal, perfect, and independent of the personal perception of an individual. This will be a new, true perception of the only existing reality. We now live in an imaginary reality, and our entire world is an illusion that arises in our material sense organs due to egoistic desires that pull everything to themselves. This reality exists only in our imagination. When we ascend from the material world to the spiritual world, we feel as if we are waking up from a dream. We are now in a dream and must wake up. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 19, 2020, Bereshit. From a passive observer to an active researcher. 2,000 years ago, the nation of Israel fell from its spiritual level to the corporeal one, from the intention of bestowal to the intention for its own sake. As a result, we have turned into completely different people, into a different nation with a new religion, a new outlook on life, and a different perception of reality. Previously, we perceived all reality as one single whole in which one force acted, and we all belonged to it. But gradually, together with the collapse of the first temple and then after 1,000 years of the second temple, we began to move away from bestowal and unification into perceiving life as we see it today, that is, purely corporeally, egoistically, and recognize the unification of a man only with himself, but not with others. Today we will have to make a lot of effort to return to the spiritual, true perception of reality. We must understand that this perception of reality and intention is in conflict with what is accepted in all religions. Each religion wants to establish itself above others, be proud of it, and teach the same to the people who follow it. We, however, need to advertise a union that will raise us above all problems, because they are all a consequence of remoteness, separation, and unfounded hatred among us. If I perceive reality egoistically, care only about my own existence, see others from afar, and do not unite with them through feelings into one whole, then I see the world as it is today, in my five sense organs. But if I unite with someone else, at least with one person, for this I need to annul myself, and then I will already begin to perceive the reality with different organs of sensation. These will no longer be the ordinary sight, hearing, smell, taste, and touch, but the Sefirot Keter, Hochma, Bina, Zir and Pin, and Malkhut. I will see reality as single and perfect. It will already be a reality that does not exist within myself, but outside of me. That is, it will not be limited by my sensory organs. To the extent that I abandon my personal sensation, my desire to receive pleasure, for the external perception, for the desire to bestow, to that extent I will reveal the true reality. I will reveal the light in the desire for bestowal, which I was able to build within my desire to receive pleasure, the form of bestowal and love, that is, the form of the Creator. From a passive observer of reality, I will turn into its active researcher. This is what the science of Kabbalah teaches us. We must all receive the form of a spiritual part, Suf, which contains desire, restriction, screen, and reflected light. Then it becomes active, can bestow to the Master, unite with him, and attain him, as it is written, "And you will be like God, and know good and evil." In religion, a person performs corporeal actions and wants to receive a corporeal reward for them. But we want to perform spiritual actions, that is, build a mutual connection, unity, up to love between us. This will be our reward. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 19, 2020, Bereshit. My article in Newsmax, "Ignoring COVID is playing Russian roulette with our kids' health." For all our efforts to deny its severity, COVID-19 is not a joke. It's a serious illness, and the more we ignore it, the more serious it becomes. If at first we thought that it affected only elderly and unwell people, we now know that it affects everyone, at all age groups and at all levels of health. But the most frightening aspect about the coronavirus is its impact on children. While most infected children remain asymptomatic, some develop a very severe condition known as pediatric multisystem inflammatory syndrome, PIMS, which affects their brain, and can even lead to death. Ignoring the risks from COVID-19 is in many ways like playing Russian roulette. The odds of dying in this case are much slimmer, but the head at the gunpoint is that of our children. Are we willing to take the risk? The more we stall with dealing with the virus, the more infectious and more violent it becomes. What will happen if we stall for another 6 months? How much worse will it impact us, and our children? Do we want to wait for the mortality rate to rise? Do we want to sit by until hospitals are unable to treat people with any illness because their beds are taken by COVID patients? We really should know better. The novel coronavirus isn't here on a brief visit. I said it when it first arrived, and now science is beginning to recognize it. A few days ago, John Edmonds, a member of the UK Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, told lawmakers that we are going to have to live with this virus forevermore. There is very little chance that it's going to become eradicated. In simpler words, the life we had until 2020 will never return. We have to build a new and better one. The first place to start in reconstructing our lives is our society. If we examine each crisis that humanity is grappling with, we will find specific causes for each of them. But behind each crisis, whether it is climate change, forest fires, COVID-19, hunger, war, water pollution, air pollution, substance abuse, poverty, obesity, domestic violence, racism or any other crisis, they are all caused by our lack of consideration, by our alienation from each other. We patronize some, demonize others, abuse, manipulate and cheat our way to wealth and power. Some are more aggressive, some are less so, but this is the dominant mindset around the world. This is also the mindset that has inflicted on us the countless crises plaguing our planet. We will never overcome them until we uproot our constant mistreatment of each other. We know that mutual responsibility is great for all of us, we feel it instinctively. But whenever we want to implement it, the voice of reason awakens in our heads and says that it is pointless to attempt to implement it since too few people are willing to make the effort, that it's against human nature, that we're dreaming if we think that this can ever work, etc. But is it against human nature to want to feel safe? Is it against human nature to want to be able to trust people? Is it against human nature to build networks of mutual responsibility in order to secure everyone's health and well-being? On the contrary, nothing is more natural than these behaviors. Every settlement provides its residents with exactly these benefits. It is why people live in settlements and communities, and when we choose our leaders, we look for the ones who can best provide us with these necessities. But while we are living in systems that secure our lives, we mistreat each other, the building blocks of the systems that sustain us. It does not make sense. It's as if cells attacked an antigen that came to help them fight a virus, and then complained that they were sick. We must stop yielding to our egos. They are warping our perception and make us think all the wrong things about each other. They make us hate each other when in fact we're all dependent on each other and wouldn't be able to live if it weren't for all of us. And if we're not strong enough to fight our egos for our own sake, let's at least do it for our children. It is not their fault that we are letting our egos run amok, it is not their fault that we are heartless, gutless and cannot look beyond our noses. Let's at least give up on our egos for their sake, so they, too, we'll have a future, and let's not play Russian roulette with our kids' heads at gunpoint. My new article on LinkedIn: the satire of anti-Semitism. On Twitter and Facebook alone, A staggering 1.7 million anti-Semitic posts were made this year, said U.S. Special Envoy for Monitoring and Combating Antisemitism, Elan Carr. That is no laughing matter. But what if we fight hate with satire like comedians try to do? Could that be an effective way to tackle conspiracy theories against Jews? I think, yes. Regardless of whether it is done in a straightforward fashion or from the flip side, what matters most is to awaken the question of why the endless Jew hatred exists, as an important step to solving the problem for good. Only the people of Israel can make a difference in the world because they are the people who received the method of connection, the wisdom of Kabbalah, which describes the means for drawing the unique force in nature capable of neutralizing any disruption and negativity in reality. That force that balances hatred is the power of love created through Jewish unity. When Jews are united and become an example to follow, they will arise as the light unto the nations, lighting up the path to a positive future for humanity. That will be the day when fairness, equality, and mutual understanding will have the last laugh. The coronavirus comes from a place called Wuhan, which is in Israel, joked Jewish comedian Sacha Baron Cohen on a popular US television show, and was reported in some media outlets. People certainly don't take him seriously, and it is clear that his intention isn't to stir up provocation, but to use sarcasm as an effective way to disparage anti-Semitism. Why could this be a great strategy? Because we need a creative approach to address the increasing animosity against Jews around the world. It might help us to highlight this phenomenon bluntly and vociferously on social media, where anti-Semitism crops up and spreads like a virus. The world's attention is currently focused on the other epidemic, COVID-19, which has upstaged Jew hatred slightly but not erased it from the playbill, as statistics show. As soon as the plague weakens, the voices of our enemies will intensify again, blaming Jews for the pandemic and other libels, as anti-Semites so openly do at every first opportunity and through any means at their disposal. However, we waste our time trying to combat the haters head-on or by struggling to remove unwanted content. These actions will not help, nor do we have the immense power and resources it would take to eradicate the problem. As soon as the measures to eliminate anti-Semitic posts are implemented in one place, they rapidly reproduce like weeds in a field. Therefore, the only strategy that will bear fruit is to learn how to take the negativity thrown our way and contrast it with all the goodness expected from the Jewish people. In fact, let's take a step back and think about this clearly for a moment. When anti-Semites blame Jews for all the calamities in the world, they are actually pointing to Jews as the only force capable of causing change in the world, as the only people who have the power to solve any crisis humanity faces but who are failing to fulfill this goal. That is a true statement, they are absolutely right. Only the people of Israel can make a difference in the world because they are the people who received the method of connection, the wisdom of Kabbalah, which describes the means for drawing the unique force in nature capable of neutralizing any disruption and negativity in reality. That force that balances hatred is the power of love created through Jewish unity. When Jews are united and become an example to follow, they will arise as the light unto the nations, lighting up the path to a positive future for humanity. That will be the day when fairness, equality, and mutual understanding will have the last laugh. Michael Leitman, on Quora. What is the purpose of life? The purpose of life is to attain the highest and most exalted state that nature prepared for us, to ascend above our inborn egoistic selves and gain a clear understanding, perception and sensation of why we, and nature on all of its levels, inanimate, vegetative, animate and human, exist. Moreover, the purpose of life cannot be forced upon or shown to anyone, similarly to how we cannot prove mathematical laws to cats. Instead, every person needs to discover the purpose of life for themselves, to elevate themselves in perception and sensation until they gain a complete vision and feeling of reality. The ascension above our inborn egoistic nature to the discovery of nature's wholeness is the fullest meaning of becoming a human being. In Hebrew, the word for human is Adam, which stems from the phrase Adamala Alion, similar to the Most High, which means that if we rise above our narrow egoistic perception and attain a whole perception of reality, we fulfill our role of becoming human in the fullest sense of the term. In principle, there are two forces in nature, reception, egoism, negative, and bestowal, altruism, positive. We are born and raised solely on the force of reception, which is expressed in us as egoism, the desire to enjoy at the expense of anything or anyone outside of oneself. Our egoism develops and grows over many generations, from a small desire to enjoy that demands nothing more than its basic survival needs, food, sex, family and shelter, to a bigger ego that requires fulfillment from myriad social connections, money, wealth, honor, respect, fame, control, power and knowledge. In our era, we have reached a uniquely significant transition point where we bear witness to our egoistic development reaching a dead end, that is, feeling it increasingly hard to feel fulfilled from egoistic pursuits, which also gives rise to a plethora of negative attitudes in society, people taking out their dissatisfaction on each other more and more, leading to increasing polarization and hatred throughout society. Today's overblown egoism thus points the way to the need for us to draw an opposite, positive and altruistic force in order for us to create balanced relations among each other and with nature. Both our inborn egoism as well as the positive altruistic force stem from nature, and the purpose of life is that we apply ourselves to attract nature's positive altruistic force above our egoistic one, in order that we live in balance and harmony with nature. Guide for Round Tables, Part 20. Lessons in the Form of a Round Table. Question: what is the main difficulty in organizing lessons in the form of a round table? What should we pay attention to? Answer: it is very difficult to make a round table from a lesson because a lesson requires a teacher. If the teacher excludes himself from this circle and is present as an outside moderator, then it is another matter. Question: in what do you see the difficulty in organizing such a round table? Answer: the difficulty is in the students themselves, whether they are ready for this, whether they understand the importance of doing exercises in this way. From CapTV's Management Skills, July 9, 2020. New Life 475. Personal interests versus national interests.
New Life, program number 475. Hello, thank you for being with us in New Life, our series of educational programs with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello. Hello to Yael also. We'd like to discuss with Rav Lightman today the relationship between the public and the leadership that leads it. We see here and around the world similar phenomena that become less and less joyful, happy. We'll talk of interest, personal interest versus national interest. Yael. So indeed we see that in recent years there is a sensation in the public that the private interests of the leaders on all levels, not only in Israel, we see it in the national, international level also. We have different scandals in Europe. Here, thank God, at least as a data I have from 2010, 190 cases open about topics related to corruptions and preferences of private interest over national interest. Also, many books came out speaking about all type of leaders. And the sensation is that if in the past there was a conflict between national interests and private interests, then the national interests prevail. And nowadays, it's the sensation is different, that the private interest is what leads the leaders in many conflicts over the national interest. And they speak a lot about ego, that their leader's ego grows, that everyone wants to become part of history and do a move that will be remembered in the nation as someone who did or changed something. There are many struggles, who would win the credits for all kind of moves. And many times the decision are taken on the basis of who received that or not. Credit, when indeed the very fundamental question arises. By what leaders receive to make their decisions? By what they take decisions? You're asking me? That's a question I like to point to you. What, am I belong to these leaders? As someone who sees the system very broadly, who understands how nature works, how the forces in nature are working, how do you see nowadays what move a leader nowadays? I don't think the leaders are much worse than the public. They basically present, they're given by the people. And even the same lad that yesterday was within the public, maybe he was some commander in the army or a manager, a big manager in some factory in some system. But all in all, he's from within the people. He's not, doesn't belong to kingship. He was educated just like everyone else in the same schools, the same university, the same state. Hence, what is it? He appeared before the public because he has just because he has a greater ego, he has power, he has on his side a few people who hit him up to stimulate him to grow. A few other people help him financially, money, and then the contacts. And so it is. Why? Because behind every person that attains himself, then in our potential league, people of interest stand behind him who are waiting for him to go into power. And by that, they'll get all kind of benefits. We spoke of education. Do you think that leaders should be educated in some place? You have like a leadership school? Yeah, there are those things. But even there, it's not... the more I see and understand and observe the phenomena, I don't see it justifying the... Well, there are such places where they are taught and preparing things, but the problem is different. The problem is, in order to be a leader, a person has to be above his ego, above his own ego. He needs to be devoted to the people, and even devoted to the world. Even devoted to the world, as much as it sounds weird. But first and foremost, he needs to be detached from any interest, totally, even if there be the local sweep cleaner, but if it would be for the nation. I didn't understand. Okay, so the leader could be someone who's willing to do anything would be asked to do for the people. He has no self-interest, only national strength. And the examination for it is simple, that he's willing to get rid of all he has for only if he and the public know that it is for the benefit of the public. And we see the opposite. Meaning those people who are being thrown away and disconnected and they're disrespected and everything. And we see as it was before everyone. They presented the nothingness, lack of understanding of... still, time after time during the year, they want to reach that. So indeed, it's a big problem. So what do they need to be willing to get rid of? You said they should be able to get rid of everything. Like what? Like anything. If it's in the benefit of the people, is that for me to leave it and go and do, I don't know, go back to be a simple worker, then I'm going. Meaning the benefit of the people must be an upper value for me. And indeed, nowadays we see opposite process. Indeed, we see process that not only people are holding very tightly to the seat, to the owner, and everything possible, and willing to also pay a national payments. And we define ourselves as a country in danger, not some country that live itself, you know, and a little vote here and there not threaten the country. So we are also a country with a security and also social threat. And we are a country that we need to observe really well. What's interesting to me from all this process is, and we'll see later on how is it possible differently, we'd like to analyze it. Say a person entered the political system. So we assume you come with a great desire, but should bring a new change, a new spirit, and we have a great thing, something that doesn't work, but then we'd like to change it. But it's gone into some vicious cycle, because the person entered the system, and the system formatted him. In order to operate correctly, he must operate according to its rules, meaning he entered a magic circle where he must enter the old conditions in order to start getting results, and eventually the upper wind, so to speak, also govern him. And I'd like to ask you, is it possible to escape these vicious cycles? No. Could it be differently? No. So what's the chance we're standing? We don't. We don't stack chance. So that a person who entered the old system will have something new come out of him. There's no chance. What's surprising is that in the recent parliament, half of the members got elected as new. They got in 2 years ago. Yeah, and the last government, out of 125 members, about 35 new members, meaning there's a growth. So also a new spirit, yeah. There's very strong force that wanted to create certain change and bring certain new spirit, and yet nothing have changed, nothing have happened. Well, how do you explain it? What? In my mind, it's not logical. Well, it's a system that eats them and that's it. What does that mean? It's just like you entering, as if you're putting papers in that, this machine that eats the paper. And what happened with the person? What happened in that transition? He must speak and act and appear and work according to all the procedures customary in the same government, the same people, same meetings, same... he has no choice. Meaning he enter a very, very, how shall I put it, a very rigid system. And if you want to match himself to it, he simply won't hear him. She can't work with him. So when a person enters such system, is he changing? No, he changes. So how come he changes? What happened in his mind, in his heart, that is changing? Well, they tell me, if you know how great that you've come, we're very happy, everything is great, and then he start talking that he'd like, and he said, no, this is not how we do it here. Check out how we need to do in order to change, obviously, for changing everything according to your will, but you need to do this and that depends on what, and that, and then, is the person coming out the same person, or is coming out as a different person? What come out is a person from which the system did whatever it has to do. That's it. We have nothing left from it, from where it was prior. So you're describing technical procedures, precisely. But as a matter of fact, what happened is that these technological processes, yeah, they kill the person and reformat him anew, make him, well, he goes like among such knives, like pieces, like a wooden doll that goes between knife that slices a different doll out of it. So I understand how no one would come out of this system and someone would come and say, all right, I was limited, I was given opportunities to act. No, I forget. Within 6 months of his absorption in the system, he's already isn't there. He's not in that. He already doesn't cry out, where is cottage for cheap for you guys and this and that and where is it? We're no longer there. So how can we forget? But he doesn't remember that. Moreover, he is given to manage those systems where possible, doing it cheaper, the cottage and the accommodation and everything. And we see that he is there as the head of that system, but that's it. So how did this happen to him? How come all of a sudden, I got into such system. It's a system that eats people. It's a monster that eats them. And that's it. And he come out like everyone else, meatball. Why do you look at me like that? I'm trying to understand the force that work within that thing, seemingly. This is the force, meaning it's not the prime minister nor the parliament members, the electorates, the elected people. Rather, it is the system itself, the great system. It in of itself is arranged in such way, including the high court and everything. It is arranged in such way that no matter what would be and who would it be, there hardly going to be any change whatsoever. Just as it was, this is what would be. So how can that state be changed? Because basically what you're telling me now is, you're telling me, well, I as a citizen, you're telling me, listen, there's no chance. Doesn't matter what, the person even with the best desire and the best intention, with the greatest talent ever, when you enter such system, the system reformat him in a way that eventually he won't be able to do anything. They will say, yes, sure, leave me the name of the company and this and then taxes, yes, and we'll reduce apartments prices, etc., and cheese and all that. Yes, we want. So guys, let's help him. All right, what do you want? And after 6 months, you see that you forgot about it. And you've done nothing, and you will do nothing. So there's kind of a frequency that all of a sudden he entered it, and instead of going against it and taking a direction as he wanted to start with, he basically straightened up in the same current and become a portion of the same current. And even if he put before him a note and writes from sunrise to sunset what he promised to do, he will see that he have 1,001 urgent things, being this tomorrow and that's the day after, and we can this without that, etc., and this and this and that. Eventually the system forces him to take a new form, the influence of the parents. Now, is there a change of changing the system into something else? No, there's no other way of changing the government. So what? From now forever, this is what we'll have? This is the situation that there's no other solution? The reason? Well, there's a solution only if we start from below, which means from the people. We start educate the people, meaning we start educate the people in all kind of ways, through Channel 66, through the our books, through lectures, through workshops, courses. If we start bringing it to the people, a new agenda, a new goal, how to build it and for it not to be dependent upon the government, so that it isn't the path of the government, right, and some orders to come from above down, rather we whom are going to the people, and we start organizing them in a way that we teach the people what does it mean to be connected correctly, what does it mean to relate to one another correctly. Then from that can come a decision. Well, it's not that it can be, this is how it would be, but not from above, not for the government. The government is in an egoistic society, the government is the most egoist. In a corrupted society, the most corrupted government. This is how it is, and we see it. So why is it so? Because we choose the most successful among the nation. If all the nation is a corrupted egoist, so we are choosing the most corrupted, most egoist leaders. How could he become a leader in that case? You said earlier, and I want to ask about this equation. I see like a mirror image. You said the leaders are like the nation's mirror. They're nothing else. Rather, it's what's happening in the nation in amplified ways in the nations. So I'd like to ask in order to understand. You said true leader has to be someone disconnected from his own interests, someone that had he been able realize that for the sake of the public, nice of being a big boss in this or that job, he would become the plain worker, like the street sweeper, or hardly is willing to move there because this is for her favorite. So this is the ideal system of a national interest versus private interest. And nowadays, regrettably, we see that we are as far as east from the west, from that state, and the situation deteriorates. So much so that in the last war, the gains of ego and self-interest even brought to curve between our systems of defense because of ego struggles between the head of this arm and the head of the other arm. We don't know, and the whole country going crazy, and there they're playing their ego games, which is the peak of their self-interest over national interest. And now you're saying they have no claims for those who are up there, because those who are up there are only reflecting the state of the public, however, in a more exaggerated way. From that, it deduct that if we want to have a devoted and good leadership for the private interest to be above the national national interest will be above the private interest, you have to start a long process somewhere up there in the public for him to grow later on, just like in agriculture would sprout out of the public some good leader in the future. So let's talk about the public. What's in us as public that we receive such leadership? Because you're choosing it. No, that's obvious. This is not what I'm asking. You're saying that leadership reflects our state as human beings. If now there's someone corrupt in some peak of a system, is reflecting the fact that in the public there are such phenomena, maybe on a low volume, for sure. So what's the state of the public nowadays in the country? Why we get such leaders? The public is egoist. What does that mean? Everyone thinks only for his own sake. We aren't connected. We aren't feeling that our destiny depends on the extent to which we'll become one, as one man with one heart, for us to think together about the state security. First of all, I'm concerned with my own security. That's it. Can I escape this place to have it good somewhere else in the world? I'll escape. Bring me a private jet so I can take my family and fly somewhere else. I'll do it. I'll do it. What will happen here, it doesn't matter to me. Anyhow, this country has no right of existence. This is what people think, each and every one. Give everyone the chance of getting along in a nice place in the world, hardly anyone will remain here. No one would remain here. I heard a survey that half the youngsters think like that. Half. Half the country. And the other half think so too, but they are yet feeling that here it's more comfortable and good, yet they're accustomed to it. But everyone is willing to let go, to leave the country. And then you get leadership that is even more exaggerated on those phenomena of self-interest. Correct. So let's depict a different image. Where do we want to lead the public? Well, ourselves. We are the public. Where do we want, into what other place can you take ourselves so that later on we'll receive also different results in providence? Well, leave the providence. We as public. What is the other image we have to come to? Because the course you described now, that everyone thinks only of himself, then connected, only self-interest, and that's it. in a sand. So if now you do the survey in 2 years' time, it will be more than 50%. Once it was 50%, I don't think it just come to expression by those who wants to leave the state or not. It's in every interaction we have nowadays. Everyone just walk all over everyone else. Exactly. And that's only increasing, right? Yes. So depict me another place Israel have to become. They have to be like. Well, we cannot survive here, moreover develop, if we won't be the people of Israel in the land of Israel. These are two terms we have to observe in order to be in it. The people of Israel, so-called, Yashar Kel, straight to the Creator, that we are all connecting among us as one man in one heart, love thy friend as thyself, and we are aiming ourselves at the upper force. The upper force means the force of love, connection, and mutual bestowal. This is what we need to long for. It doesn't mean being religious or secular. It means being connected love thyself, different as thyself. It's a great rule of the Torah. Yeah, love thy isn't new. It's something known for generations and generations. Now, we said with respect to ego games that year by year it intensifies. Man's ego increases up to heavens and he doesn't see anything other than himself, really. Also me, everyone like that. It's not that we come to blame anyone. Everyone, if you look at himself, you see that day by day, the only thing coming to expression in all our relationships, I'm incapable of seeing, I can't tolerate seeing anyone, even in the family cell that crashes. If the natural process is that everyone's ego is growing, everyone has such inflated ego, how that love the neighbors themselves of the old days, it seems like something we've left somewhere up there. Nah, that's not important. What was once in history, nowadays, all that doesn't matter. The condition remains the same. But how people with such developed ego as we have nowadays can talk about love their neighbor? Love they specifically because they begin to see how this ego bury them. It is to the contrary. The ego is great, but the person see where it's heading, where it's leading him. You see that it advances towards an abyss. I didn't understand that. I'll give an example also before you answer me. I was in a museum. I think it's like begging one of the past leaders. And the guide in the tour guide in the museum says, now we came to a room where we did imaging of the room we used to live. I see some tiny little room with a little table of half a meter. And from here, the person lived. From here, managed the country. Now open up the newspaper. Every day you have some different corruption about some different palace of some leader that built from money he extracted from the public. We're not talking a difference of thousands of years. We're talking one or two, three generations. Meaning, because I'm describing that the ego grows and grows and grows and inflates at flying forward. How over that inclination that everyone has ego up to the sky? You say, yes, there could be the love of the neighbor and a national interest over private. Out of desperation. Desperation out of what? Desperation out of us not coming to anything. And even the same leaders whom are doing it due to their ego, they're feeling themselves as coerced. It's the ego who's playing with them. I'm doing it because I must stealing. Something in me worked like that upon me. But it's not the goal and it's not the right life. And still, I can't do anything about my life. I'm incapable. Incapable not stealing, incapable not cheating. But it is my nature. So what am I doing with this nature? I see that in such manner, all of us are going, you're going to be lost. We come to a Holocaust or Third World War with atom bombs and etc. Everyone understands that. And no one has a method. How can we be saved from our inner enemy that is inside and pushes us into all kind of stealing and distortions and all kind of dance, and no one enjoys it. Rather, everyone's like, how can I from today to tomorrow maybe build myself a certain corner in which I live? Is there such corner? No, there isn't. Over Earth, no, there's nothing. So why would we give men security? The world is a bubble. What can give one confidence? Security. Only changing society, changing the world and humanity. Change towards what? Towards connection. What does that mean? Connection. We have to understand that in the global world we must be connected. That, hence the wisdom of Kabbalah is being revealed, and it gives a solution, and it says what to do. And we must take it and start correcting the world by it. Connected to what? What do you mean to what? What does it mean connected? Connected? That everyone feel the other as he feel himself. Connected into one sphere, one ball. Around the globe, as we are all connected to one system, one family. Our time is running out. Our topic was self-interest versus national interest. How would you like us to leave this program with? I'm constantly saying that you can do it only by education. You can't demand anything of the leaders nowadays. They are a byproduct of the people, of the public. And both from the public and of them, you can't come to them with certain complaints or demands, with some values that they can't even digest. It is only by education, slow, gradual education, then to the extent of the change that you bring about in the public, to that extent you can later on come and educate certain people from among the nation who will be the new leaders. Thank you very much, Dr. Rav Lightman. Thank you, El. Thank you, viewers, for being with us. We'll see you next in New Life.
Hierarchy in management. Question: how can we combine collective management with vertical management? To what extent should the boss or leader take the opinion of the people into account? Should this be done only when he or she does not have enough information to make a decision? Answer: we take into account the opinion of the people only when it is necessary to make common actions to solve problems, but nothing more. Question: so there should be a hierarchy in management? Answer: management must be vertical. And a collective must be a collective. A manager must take care about the understanding of the task, the goal to be reached, the solvability of this task, its sequence. For all this should be agreed between everyone, accepted, approved, and everyone should be inspired by the implementation of the task. Question: in this process, do we need to take into account the opinion of every person? Even in an organization employing several hundred people, not to mention the state. Answer: you can hold a meeting, maybe even more than one, in order to make the need and sequence of actions clear to everyone. Question: so it is important for a leader or a manager to hear the opinions of the people, but they have to make decisions by themselves? Answer: yes, they listen to the opinions of the people, and it is good for the subordinates to know where everything should lead. There is always room for some mistakes, an opportunity to fix or improve something, and the subordinates themselves will prompt their managers. Remark: this is all about solving easy tasks. And if you need to solve a serious problem where there is a lot of confidential information and the people do not have this information, then it is quite difficult to make a decision. My comment: then the making of the decision is split into certain segments. At the same time, we must try to do so that a team is involved in their implementation. From CAB TV's Management Skills, June 11, 2020. Examples and the perception of information. Question: The process of perception of new information goes through stages. The first stage is selective, a way of capturing information. Then there is recognition based on some associations, followed by interpretation, assessment of the significance of the information, its understanding. And, finally, is the retention of information. Do you agree with this? Answer, more or less. But all this is very difficult for a person. Let's say I'm starting to get to know something and I have to check myself against this long list to find out how much am I in this flow of information or in its absorption within myself. This is almost impossible. Remark, scientists say that it is important to link new material to clear examples. Otherwise, the material will not be absorbed. For example, it is useless to tell a person about mutual guarantee unless we provide some examples. The sages knew about this 1,000 years ago and wrote the study materials, in the sources, in the form of stories. So when you talk about mutual guarantee, imagine someone drilling a hole in a boat, it all becomes very clear. My comment, sure. In principle this remains, only a lot of data and conditions are added. Question. I think that it would be a good idea to give various examples in our explanations. For example, when you say, you must become as round as nature or reflect its laws, what can I imagine? For me, nature is forests, groves, the cosmos. What examples could you give when you say that man must reflect the laws of nature? Answer, one should simply study what nature really is, its laws. What is it trying to tell us? One must acquire some new skills, knowledge, and expand one's perception. Question. You often say that the solution to any problem is in uniting humanity. And here the question arises, what picture should I imagine? What does uniting mean? Everyone understands this in their own way. Answer. Unity is a connection between several completely different beings, concepts, or knowledge when they have a common platform. The basis for all objects and phenomena lies in desires. And if the desires are directed at unification, then people are looking for some kind of foundation or platform. This usually leads to the fact that they outline for themselves the next, more elevated state and strive for it, and help each other. From CabTV's Management Skills, July 24, 2020. Women in management. Question. You often say that women can manage better than men. Why? What is your claim based on? Answer. A woman, unlike a man, can manage many jobs. Let a man do a general cleaning of the apartment, he will not cope with it in a month. Give it to a woman, everything will be perfectly done in one day. That is, a woman is adapted to solve small but varied tasks. Question. How do female leaders differ from male leaders? Answer, I do not think that they are in any way different from each other at all because this is no longer a woman and a man, but a person who lives by an idea and has nothing to do with gender differences. From CabTV's Management Skills, June 11, 2020. Communication in the family. Question. What should be the basic principle of a person's relationship with their family? Answer. The family, according to Kabbalah, is a person's environment, which allows him to exist in our world as correctly, normally, and comfortably as possible. Question. For example, I love my children and my wife so I do not need to make much effort to treat them responsibly and altruistically. Can we say that nature gives us such an example so that we can later treat other people in the same way? Answer, no. We cannot determine our attitude toward others without taking into account their attitude toward us. Therefore, if we are talking about building relationships within a family, then we must take care of the inanimate, vegetative, and animate levels in order to provide our household with these levels in the necessary, rational form. Question. But why is it created by nature that a person should have some kind of small cell close to him? Answer: everything comes from the earth, from the inanimate level, followed by the vegetative, and then the animate level. In order to maintain and develop these levels in us, we must continue to exist in them, despite the fact that we are already, perhaps, at a higher level. Therefore, any great Kabbalist still has a family, and he takes care of it to some extent. He satisfies the basic desires of his loved ones, although, in principle, his spiritual essence, his spiritual ties with the upper system in which he already resides, have nothing to do with communications within his family. From CabTV's Communication Skills, July 30, 2020.